Stay tuned for a message from Facebook after the show.
Dan Diamond, Sarah Overmall, you ever think about how the three of us are kind of like the perfect little metaphor for coronavirus?
Where is this going?
Please explain.
No, think about it, right? Until there's a vaccine, there's going to be a resurgence of our voices. We're going to be putting out new podcast episodes until there's a vaccine or until we just completely cut off all communication and interaction with each other, right?
So we're like a second wave of podcasts?
At this point, I think we're like the third or fourth wave,
right,
with the podcast.
Fair.
I interpreted it differently, Jeremy. I thought you were saying we were a plague on Americans.
I think he was saying that too.
Maybe there are some people who do that. Leave us a rating and review and let us know what you think. I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, Dan Diamond and Sarah Overmall on how the race for a coronavirus vaccine is getting caught up in the race for the White House. Over the weekend, we saw the political fight over vaccine development ramping up with a sort of tit-for-tat between the Trump-Pence campaign and Biden-Harris. Dan, what exactly happened?
Kamala Harris told CNN this weekend that she had severe doubts about any vaccine coming out under the Trump administration.
I think that's going to be an issue for all of us. I will say that I would not trust Donald Trump.
First, that she would not trust it. Then when she was pushed on whether scientists would back the vaccine, Kamala Harris said that wouldn't be enough. She feared that they would be muzzled.
They'll be suppressed. They will be sidelined because he's looking at an election coming up in less than 60 days, and he's grasping.
Eventually, she allowed that maybe if Dr. Tony Fauci endorsed the vaccine, that would be good enough for her. And that caused some concern, not just among Republicans, but really among some folks in the public health community, too. Joe Biden came out quickly and tried to walk back some of his running mate's comments. He said on Monday that he wanted a vaccine right away. He didn't care if it hurt his electoral chances. He'd be willing to lose the election over it, which I think we should acknowledge is the right moral approach. But it was Trump who has done as much as anyone to raise concerns about politicization of the vaccine and has tamped down realistic fears about coronavirus. It was the president who took umbrage and called for an apology.
Biden and his very liberal running mate, the most liberal person in Congress, by the way, is not a competent person, in my opinion, should immediately apologize for the reckless anti-vaccine rhetoric.
So, Sarah, this is all happening with the backdrop of some serious concerns within the FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, about how they can maintain public confidence in a vaccine. What exactly is going on inside of the agency right now? Like, how are they trying to assure people that a vaccine will be safe and effective with this backdrop of Trump's messaging and with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's messaging?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of discussion within FDA about these sobering poll numbers that say that a lot of Americans, nearly a fifth, are hesitant to take a vaccine, and only 14% of people would trust one that came under the Trump administration. And so they're very aware of those types of numbers, and they're aware, too, of a history of what has been steady decline in vaccine confidence broadly, but also particularly among minorities that are most impacted by this virus. So African-American, Latinx, and American Indian communities. So they've been discussing how to reach out to the public more and how to reach out to the scientific community more. That's come largely in the form of editorials being done by Commissioner Stephen Hahn and some of his colleagues. Earlier this week, he tweeted that he's going to be talking more on Twitter about their transparency efforts around vaccines. He created a new hashtag, FDA vaccine facts. He says that's going to be a regular feature for him. And what's good about that is that he says that this is him talking directly to people, and he wants to make this more approachable and start discussing with the public right now, here's how the FDA is going to move transparently through this process so that you don't have to worry about these questions about safety and effectiveness. But it's not been just the FDA. Now industry is piping up too. So 9 of the manufacturers that have vaccines in human trials, some of which are in very late stage trials, banded together to write this statement and promised to be transparent about what they're doing, to only submit something for approval or emergency use authorization if they find it safe and effective in a phase 3 trial. Now, there's a caveat there that people are concerned about. They left the door open to doing an emergency use authorization. And we've talked a lot about those for other things on this podcast, like plasma and hydroxychloroquine. It's an authority that's given during an emergency, and it's saying that this could be effective. We don't have solid evidence yet for it. A lot of public health experts are worried about a vaccine being authorized through that because there's a lot of long-term questions that you need to answer with vaccines. And especially since a lot of this data is going to be coming in October, there's a lot of concern about the politics around it and if people are going to trust those vaccines.
A lot of the conversation about the politics of this, Dan, comes down to President Trump possibly pushing development too quickly to help his prospects. But, I mean, we were talking about Kamala Harris's remarks over the weekend. Is there any truth to the notion that Democrats could be doing the same thing, that they might be questioning something that is rigorously being tested for safety, for efficacy, and that their questioning is just coming from the point of politics as well?
Jeremy, I love that you're raising this question because I think we should challenge the conventional wisdom and narrative. And it is true that Democrats have campaigned aggressively on coronavirus and how the Trump administration has often botched the response. It's worth noting some of the loudest voices criticizing the president's response. Ron Klain, Andy Slavitt, Vivek Murthy, they're either Obama alums or they're actively working on the Biden campaign. So they do have some professional skin in the game. At the same time, I think there's no comparison between how President Trump has approached the vaccine development and how Democrats and watchdogs have raised often appropriate concerns about meddling in vaccine development. And I think that's what Joe Biden was trying to clean up in his comments this week, where he stressed he wants a vaccine. He is concerned about the president's response. He doesn't want to see political meddling, but he wants a vaccine, he said, more than being president.
I guess I'm curious if public confidence is key for the adoption of a vaccine. Do you think these political fights over it, the media's coverage of it all, even like this conversation, could be doing a disservice for public confidence?
Point taken. I think there's evidence that the more of a media firestorm around any issue, the more that negative perceptions of that issue can rise. This goes back to the 2016 election and how negative coverage of Hillary Clinton's emails drove negative feelings about Hillary Clinton's emails. But in this case, I think what's the alternative? Let the Trump administration quietly put pressure on public health officials and the president potentially meddle with the coronavirus response? We already saw that happen with hydroxychloroquine, the malaria drug back in the spring that the president championed. And that has become a political mess with the FDA trying to walk back all of the confusion and concern that the agency sped emergency authorization for a treatment, and a significant number of Americans believing that hydroxychloroquine can offer benefits in treating coronavirus when the jury is either still out or actively against. I do think, Jeremy, that there's evidence that the controversy at times over a political issue can end up redounding in unexpected and positive ways. For instance, the controversy over the healthcare.gov website back in 2013, 2014, when the Obama administration's health insurance website didn't work for months, that became a major story on broadcast news, in daily news coverage. And I've talked to researchers about this. It likely drove attention in this health insurance website and potentially led to a surge in signups when the website did work. The circumstances are obviously different, but there is a universe where the average American is much more aware of a coronavirus vaccine because the media has been aggressively covering the development of a coronavirus vaccine.
Sarah, do you have any thoughts on this all, like what the media's role is in the conversation, whether there is any concern over, you know, hurting public confidence?
Absolutely. I think it's a double-edged sword, and I'm acutely aware of not wanting to fuel public fear in whether there's a safe and effective vaccine, but there's a level of accountability that comes from these types of articles when we bring to light these disputes or the fact that with hydroxychloroquine, the evidence was so thin and that it was largely led by certain people who didn't have a science background. You know, that sets the stage for FDA and for other officials to be more accountable in the future, especially about their actions around high stakes things like vaccines. And then for someone like me who I've been covering pharmaceuticals and vaccines for a long time, there is a real importance in explaining to people what is happening in these trials. So another really good example that feeds into this, I think, is that this week, AstraZeneca, one of those nine companies that signed that statement pledging safety, they actually paused their study this week because someone in it had a serious adverse event. There was spinal inflammation. And so this is how science is supposed to work. They paused the study to find out if the vaccine led to that, if there were other factors going on. In all likelihood, they're going to investigate that, come up with an answer, start the trial again soon. But why it's important to continue talking about these things, it's not to raise fear that, you know, someone who's listening right now could get spinal inflammation, but to say, this is how it works. This is why trials take a long time. This is why when someone says we're going to have a vaccine in October, they can't make that promise because that assumes every single thing goes perfectly. And that vaccine probably still will be safe, but they're doing the process right now to figure that out.
Sarah Overmall, Dan Diamond, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks. Looking forward to the fifth wave.
Thanks for letting us plague your eardrums this week, America.
Also today, a new whistleblower complaint released by the House Intelligence Committee says top Trump appointees at the Department of Homeland Security repeatedly sought to censor or stop reports on Russian influence activities in the U.S. The report, which was filed by DHS official Brian Murphy, alleges that Acting Secretary Chad Wolf, his predecessor Kirstjen Nielsen, and other senior DHS officials engaged in a, quote, repeated pattern of abuse of authority, attempted censorship of intelligence analysis, and improper administration of an intelligence program related to Russian efforts to influence and undermine United States interests. Murphy claims that pattern stretched from March of 2018 until last month. Spokespeople for DHS, the White House, and National Security Council did not immediately respond to requests for comment. And new fundraising numbers show that President Trump and the RNC brought in $210 million in August, which falls more than $150 million short of what Joe Biden raised over the same period. Biden and the DNC previously announced a massive, record-shattering $265 million raised last month. Neither campaign has released their cash-on-hand totals yet, but the difference in money raised last month increases Biden's chances of closing Trump's formerly huge cash advantage. The new numbers come as the Trump team has opted to go dark on TV spending in several battleground states. In a statement, Trump's campaign manager said they'll, quote, have all the resources we need to spread the message of President Trump's incredible record of achievement on the ground and on the air. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, you can help us find new listeners by leaving a rating and review in your favorite app and by telling a friend to check out the show. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
Small businesses are the foundation of our communities, and right now they're facing extraordinary challenges. That's why at Facebook, we've expanded our support to help businesses adapt and grow online while many of their doors remain closed. If you're a business owner or know someone who is, visit facebook.com/resource for free tools and resources to help adapt to today's environment. That's facebook.com/resource.